powerful stories can serve as a portal for transformation, liberation, and healing. But we must first be open to change, a process of surrendering and letting go. This is no easy task, especially when the images we hold strongly shape our worldview. In my case, I resonate deeply with the Sufi story that we shared earlier about the stream meeting the desert. Why? Because I too have found myself at crossroads in my life. I imagine some of you have as well. Academic podiums and religious pulpits were the dominant images that informed my worldview. I grew up on a university campus in Silicon Valley as the daughter of a faculty professor. Our family attended a progressive peace and justice church with these guiding words: do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with your God. Podiums and pulpits evoked for me the image of leadership through the written and spoken word. As a child, I witnessed how professors and pastors eloquently expressed themselves in speech and carried themselves with composure and dignity in their bodies. I naturally assumed, without question, that these models must reflect what it means to grow up, become a leader, make a difference, enact social change. I equated voice with power. Suddenly, at 6 years old, my world turned upside down. The two prized traits within the institutions of academia and voice and composure were dramatically altered due to life-threatening brain hemorrhage. My brain injury directly impacted my language abilities. I struggled with information processing and word-finding difficulties. As for composure, my brain injury resulted in epilepsy. I faced a crisis of identity. Like the stream meeting the desert, I didn't know how to transform myself. If I equated leadership and power with voice and composure, then who am I without these traits? How would I navigate my way in the world? This identity crisis pushed me to explore alternative worldviews, especially around the nonverbal language of the creative arts. I joined an arts-based facilitation workshop called Partners for Youth Empowerment. Through this workshop, I met Warren Hooley. He is from the Okanagan Territory of British Columbia in Canada. He has mixed roots in Okanagan, Siksik, English, and Ukrainian heritage. This was my first orientation and encounter with someone who opened me up to an Indigenous worldview. I'll never forget the powerful impact that his words had on me. He said, "In the Indigenous world, we see art forms as a way of healing. It's about the inherent value of being seen and heard and known for the stories of who you are." Could it be possible that my inherent value ran deeper than the words I spoke and the way I carried myself in my body. Could art truly serve as a holistic approach to healing and belonging? So often I feel invisible to others, given my non-apparent disabilities from my childhood illness. And many of us carry unseen, invisible, non-apparent disabilities in many ways that we are not seen and affirmed in our belonging. I wanted to have a sense that this connection with Warren Hooley opened up space for me to view the world differently, shift my mindset, be willing to consider alternative perspectives. Later, I came across Rezma Menakem's trauma-informed therapy work through his book, My Grandmother's Hands. His embodied approach to healing further expanded an alternative worldview. He invited me to think more holistically about the wisdom of the body and the power of embodiment beyond my initial perceptions of words, composure, and academia and religion. These were the compelling words that impacted me greatly. He said, recent studies and discoveries increasingly point out that we heal primarily in and through our bodies, not just through the rational brain. We can all create more room and more opportunities for growth in our nervous system. But we do that primarily through what our bodies experience and do, not through what we think or realize or cognitively figure out. It's a paradigm shift for many of us. And as Elsa is mentioning about nature, once again, I too experienced a surge of expanding hope and possibility. Like the stream, meeting the desert, I recalled echoes of myself through a nature-based approach to the world beyond the written and spoken world, beyond universities and churches, beyond podiums and pulpits. I remember my carefree self playing and laughing and delighting in the beautiful, awe-inspiring open spaces, the open space preserves and greenbelt districts where I grew up here in Palo Alto. And maybe if you are familiar with the dish and overseeing the beautiful space we have. This was on the indigenous land of the Ohlone people, who were intimately connected to nature and beheld it with reverence, kinship, and reciprocity. Robin Wall Kimmerer is a biologist, author, and member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. She expresses reciprocity beautifully in her book, Braiding Sweetgrass. Paying attention is a form of reciprocity with the living world, receiving the gifts with open eyes and an open heart. She offers a living, dynamic, relational sense of kinship that cultivates a deep sense of belonging through nature's diverse ecosystems. The more my world expanded to encompass diverse images and perspectives around art, embodiment, and nature, the more courageous I became in challenging institutional power. In April of 2024, I was invited to speak at Stanford University about my own lived experience of neurodiversity at the intersection of ecology and theology. For example, higher education prizes excellence and leadership around the written and spoken word. Not only that, but this didactic lecture-style approach assumes that all people process information verbally. Furthermore, it assumes that students learn best through a posture of stillness and model attentive listening. As a neurodivergent minister with lived experience in academic institutions from grade school to graduate school, those are a lot of unchecked assumptions. My brain and body require kinesthetic movement as a core access need. This tactile approach to learning is how I compose my thoughts and translate them into language and writing for writing and preaching here. In addition, grounding my body in nature offers a calm, sensory-friendly environment to support my epilepsy in regulating my body and reducing stress. This, too, is an access need of mine. I began asking myself a series of three questions that I addressed at Stanford. One, how might we center the voices and lived experience of neurodivergent people to design more inclusive learning environments and learning spaces in academic and religious institutions? Two, what might it look like if we shift these institutional models towards a nature-based, embodied, multi-sensory approach towards learning to meet a wider range of access needs for neurodiverse people? And three, what might public gardens serve as a nature-based model of universal design within the disability justice movement for people of all abilities? This dialogue around revisioning a more inclusive learning environment for diverse brains and bodies catalyzed multiple conversations. It sparked new relationships with community organizations within the healthcare field, education, and ecology. One of the most exciting relationships that I cultivated was with a woman named Rhonda. She reached out to me and said, "I attended your Stanford talk and appreciated the connection you made between neurodiversity and public gardens. I am wondering for about greater equity, accessibility, and inclusion." She said, "I am an autistic medical anthropologist from the National Institute of Health. I'm working at the intersection of climate change and lived experience. I just completed an edited book on climate change and mental health equity for Springer Publishing. I'm also editing a book on lived experience of neurodiversity and climate change. I wanted to see if you might be interested in assessing your interest in being part of this edited volume too." Rhonda and I met and we hit it off. Her timing was perfect. As a community minister affiliated with Saltwater UU Church in Des Moines, Washington, I serve as a bridge builder, connecting church values of love and justice in the larger community. Gardens are my chosen sanctuary, where I help tend the soil of the earth, as well as cultivating nature-based spiritual practices cultivating our own soul and soil of all of us ecologically. My parish minister colleague, Reverend Allison Duran Sutherland, tends to the flourishing of congregations like this one and connecting church members with social justice outreach projects as an expression of faith through service. Climate change is part of that collective vision for congregational life in community settings. Reverend Allison and I underwent a period of discernment in reflecting on how we might embody climate change on a congregational level in concrete, specific ways. I also engaged in my own discernment process around Rhonda's question about climate change and neurodiversity. Then one day, we received a phone call from a man named Mike. Mike is a retired Boeing engineer and a master gardener. He gave voice and definition to our quiet, reflective discernment phase. It was a big ask, but an exciting one to consider. He invited us to explore a possible collaboration between Saltwater UU Church and the Federal Way Community Garden Network. Mike planted two thriving community gardens. In 2009, he approached the Federal Way Senior Center and asked if he could plant a garden on their plot of land. He wanted to grow food to help support low-income seniors with fresh organic produce. This garden-based effort in turn helped support economic justice and address the needs of food insecurity. The senior center staff members eagerly agreed. A couple years later, in 2011, he approached the Career Academy at Truman Campus in Federal Way and asked if he could plant a garden on their plot of land. The Career Academy is an innovative, big-picture learning high school for scholars who want to learn through projects and internships. Scholars develop competency through pursuing projects of their own design. They intern in the community twice a week. They present their learning to exhibitions and family advisors and mentors. Mike felt that a garden might offer a nature-based approach to the school's mission-aligned values around hands-on learning and beyond the classroom. Once again, the faculty members agreed and warmly welcomed him. Mike is now 83 years old. He is thinking ahead to how he might recruit the younger generations to help tend his gardens with innovation and care for seniors and students alike. I told Mike that I felt honored by his 15 years of dedication towards planting seeds of possibility to help the Federal Way community grow and thrive. I couldn't promise him that our church would be able to single-handedly take over the management responsibilities of tending the two gardens, but maybe through relationship building and collaboration with other community organizations, we might be able to grow a collective core group of volunteers to help carry his vision out for future generations. For example, Highline College in Federal Way offers the Sustainable Agriculture and Food Security Program. It provides students with practices of hands-on learning through the agricultural industry demands, while giving special attention to ecological and social justice aspects of this discipline. Maybe we could find some volunteers there. Then there's the Beacon Hill Food Forest, located in Beacon Hill. This organization's mission is to cultivate a community dedicated to building equitable food systems for people of all over and stewarding our environment for the benefits of all species, caring for the earth, caring for the people, working to create fair share for all. Maybe we could have volunteers there too. These hopeful yet unknown collaborations leave me feeling wistful, tender, vulnerable. What if people say no to my heartfelt networking requests? What if these partnerships do not lead to the desired outcome and Mike's community garden vision is not realized for future generations? What if people don't share my dream that is so core to my own lived experience around the mission around healthcare, education, and the environment. How do I let go and trust the process? How might I open myself up to new ideas and visions that are different from my own? Fortunately, growing edges offer ample opportunities to practice learning, leaning into discomfort, accompanied by its many hopes and fears. This is exactly what I will be doing this year. In May of 2024, I embarked on a year-long theological incubator program with a cohort of 16 UU spiritual innovators. It's called the UU Cultivators Collaborative, an initiative sponsored by the UUA's Commission on Institutional Change, reflecting the 2020 report, Widening the Circle of Concern. Its purpose is to model a collaborative leadership approach towards designing sacred spaces of healing and liberation for underserved, underrepresented people within the BIPOC, LGBTQIA+, and disability communities. My particular project will focus on the intersection of climate change and neurodiversity. This growing edge of spiritual innovation helps me hold things lightly from a place of curiosity, grounded in relationship building. My entrepreneurial ministry calls me to try new things, see how things go, pivot when needed, and keep showing up. That's all I can do. That's all any of us can do. Build relationships, explore possibilities, and keep showing up. Some of my favorite principles from Adrienne Marie Brown's book, Emergent Strategy, are these. Move at the speed of trust and soul. Focus on critical connections more than critical mass. Build resilience by building relationships. Never a failure, always a lesson. For closing, may we plant seeds of possibility with an open mind and open heart. Like the stream meeting the desert, may we be willing to surrender and let go of our own agendas in order to embrace transformation and healing. And may we welcome new perspectives and worldviews and wisdom from around the world. May it be so, and blessed be.